question was asked, why do we get dressed up on Purim? So I want us to start earlier with the question. And let's begin with the fact that when we see everyone doing something, then we say, oh, okay. So there's this custom in Judaism, and we respect it. And this concept that when we see everyone doing something, we respect it, actually appears in a very strong way in the laws of Purim. Because in the laws of Purim, the commentaries bring a custom that we bang when we say Haman's name. Now, we don't find that in the rest of the Torah. Where do we find that we bang when we say someone's name? So that custom is quoted, and it's quoted in the early ancient commentaries, that in ancient times, they would write on two rocks, Haman or Amalek, and then they'd bang them every time they'd say Haman in the Megillah. And this was a fulfillment of what the Medrash says, that Timche etzecher Amalek, Amalek's name will be erased even from the rocks, that they'll get erased even from the rocks, that there won't be any identity, those other rocks of Amalek. So the custom was that they would bang two rocks together, and they'd write on them Amalek or Haman, and then they'd bang them, and then during the course of the Megillah, every time they'd say Haman, they'd bang the two rocks, the kids, yeah? And then, eventually, by the end of the Megillah, the name would get erased. You wouldn't have it. When I was a child, they told us, the Rebbe said in like first grade, that the way to bang Haman is with your foot. You should bang like this when they say Haman. And and before the Megillah, write Haman on your shoe, on the bottom of your shoe. And by the end of the Megillah, you should bang enough that you get erased from your shoe. So I was very frustrated, because initially I couldn't get it into my shoe. No pen would write on my shoe. And then when I got it on my shoe, I couldn't get it off. It was very frustrating. Here I was trying to do what was right. But at any rate, coming back to the ancient custom was like that. And then when you start reading the text from 800 years ago, 1,000 years ago, you start hearing about all kinds of other things they did. Like they would make this big doll of Haman, and they'd have him hanging. And then when the time would come, when Purim would come, they'd burn him in a barn fire. They'd make this big doll of Haman, and they'd leave him hanging. The kids would play. They'd have this barn fire, and the kids would take turns leaping across the bonfire. Then, when you reach the Shulchan Aruch, in the end of the laws of Purim, which didn't show up here, just a second. I don't know why it didn't show up in my search, so I'll just open it up. So, you start encountering another side to Purim. Guys, don't try this at home. However, we will now read about what the ancient custom was to do on Purim. And it says like this. No. Why are we frozen here? Okay, I am not succeeding today. I don't know why. Here we go. Okay. Says like this. Uma shenagu, says the Rama, lilvosh partzufim bepurim. People put on masks on Purim. Okay, the Rama quoted it. So I already have an early source. It's been a custom for 700 years. Vegever lovesh simnat isha. And in ancient times, men got dressed up as women. Vishakli gever. And women got dressed up as men. Here in the Rama. Okay, I'm reading Rama. Any suba davar. It's not prohibited. People are doing it as part of the festivities. They're getting dressed up. That's part of the joy of Purim. So when we read it in the Ramah is telling me it's part of the fun of Purim. So as a child, they taught us other reasons. When I was a kid, they told me the reason we get dressed up for Purim is because Purim is all about charity. and you have matanas levionim, and in order not to embarrass the poor, people would get dressed up so that when they brought the charity, the poor never knew who they were getting from, so they didn't have to get embarrassed. That's what I was told when I was a kid, that that's where the custom came from, that people would get dressed up to do the mitzvah of tzedakah, and this was a way of ensuring that the poor don't get embarrassed. Another reason I heard when I was a child was that people would get dressed up so that this reflects the way the miracle was. That the whole miracle was about, it's not what you think you see. You think you see one thing, right? So that was the idea. Just a second. Here we go. Now, the custom, the Rama, is quoting from a response of the Mahari Mintz, which preceded him by quite a number of years. And he writes, this is a custom that is widespread, and no one says no. And then he says, it must be, one of the reasons that's given, is it's not that men would wear women's clothing. It's that men and women would switch costumes. And it was a costume, I guess, was some kind of robe that they would wear. So it's not considered like you're wearing a woman's dress, because your wife wore the costume in the morning and you wear it in the afternoon, and you're wearing the same costume, and there's no costume that's called a man's costume or a woman's costume. So that's what the Mahari Mintz writes, that if everyone's wearing the same costume, it seems like they had this costume that was equal, like men and women wore the same costume on Purim. So that's the reason the Mahari Mintz writes. Now, the next thing is they used to have, guys, don't jump on me, but they used to have this thing that people used to grab things from one another on Purim. That it was like, I don't want to say what it was like, but people would literally take things from one another on Purim. It was a game. Just like stealing the Afikoman, people would take things from one another on Purim. And this was the game. And there was another game, which is quoted on Purim, and that is that they, let's see if I can find it here. There was another game that they used to play on Purim, which I'm not seeing here. They used to go riding on horses with anvils. You know, two people charging at one another with shields and spears. So that's another game that they used to play. And here, the Rama says like this, and this is why it shows up in Choshen Mishpat also, that if people are playing this game, you can't say that when he grabbed your Mishloach Monos from you, he stole. If that's the custom, then it's not stealing. If they had this custom that people would grab from one another, so that's not stealing, and you can't sue him for something he grabbed from you. Now, I don't know how you chose what was in the game, what was out of the game. I don't know.
Who first proposed this game?
I don't know, but he says it had rules, and this was played, and this was accepted, and the Mahari Mintz quotes it. And if you want, I'll read you what he writes. He says, let's see if I can find it. Here we go. The Mahari Mintz writes like this: the custom. Again, this is not going to sound like what we're familiar with. The custom to wear faces on Purim. Young men, young girls, and old people too, with the youngsters. Everyone gets dressed up on Purim. He says, my beloved friend, the chief rabbi, Rav Eliakim Segal, wrote that it's okay, that it's a kosher custom, and he has good proofs for it. And anyone who dares start saying it's a wrong custom is not right, because he brought good proofs. This is what the Ma'ari Mintz writes. But I'll bring more proofs, even though it's unnecessary. He did a good job. That's what he writes. Give me 1 second. The Marie Mintz was from Germany, and he lived in the 15th century, and the Jews were expelled from Mintz or Mainz in his lifetime. So that's when we assume that he was expelled, that he left Mainz also. So he writes like this, says, I'll bring you proof also, even though it's not necessary. But here we see it was an accepted custom. And he says, I saw the most pious of people that saw their sons and daughters-in-law, meaning adults did this too, not like today, wearing masks, changing their clothing. Men would wear their wives' clothing, wives would wear their husbands' clothing, and no one said there's a problem. And he says, if it was unacceptable, then how could it be all the pious people I learned by didn't say anything? So obviously they had a good reason to say it's permissible. So it must be that no one would start thinking when they wore their wives' clothing improper thoughts. And he says, people who mock this custom of ours, they're wrong. You can't ignore something that everyone's doing and say everyone's wrong. And then... yes, sir.
You do have post-game today that go very against people wearing women's clothing in Purim.
Right.
So I'm saying this is just going...
So let's finish hearing him and then we'll get back to that question.
Wearing a women's clothing.
Tov, he goes through a long response here. I don't think we should take the time for it right now. But lemaise, we see that this was an accepted custom. Now you'll ask me, hey, wait a second, Rabbi, should I get dressed up as a girl? And the answer is no. So you'll say, wait a second, but he just said it's okay.
I want to respect the tradition.
Right. So the answer is that being that today this is not the custom, the whole logic of what he was saying was that this was the custom. So he said, okay, we can justify it. But today there is no such custom. We don't...
The poskim say today that's a lav. It's not just is it right. A custom or not. I'm saying... So my question is more like the lav... A custom is something that comes and goes. But the lav, alti vashe gever simat tishas, that's something that can't the generations decide.
It's not true. Ran writes in the 6th chapter of Shabbos that the geder of what's called a man wearing a woman's clothing is dependent on the times. Meaning in the generations where men wear rings, so a man can wear a ring. In a generation where men wear earrings, so a man can wear an earring. I don't know about today. You know, that's a big question. So the question here is, do we go by the Jewish population or the general population? That's two opinions in the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch.
But in the tradition was is to wear, so why did the tradition then change?
I don't know why the tradition changed.
On one hand, you just trust the tradition.
That's true when you live in a place where everyone does it.
I think that time, women and men clothing are not so different, which means that they're just...
That was one of the explanations, but I don't know what they did. I know that today, everyone that's getting dressed up is not getting dressed up as women. It's the exception. Look, my brothers and I got dressed up every year. Once out of all the years, one of my brothers got dressed up as a woman. So figure we got dressed up, let's say, from age 5 to age, I don't know what, 15, right? 10 years, 5 boys. That's 50 times. One out of 50, one of us got dressed up as a woman. I'm saying, and all the other years, none of us got dressed up as a woman. And all the people you see all around don't. I'm saying this custom is not our custom. So, again, if a person gets dressed up as a girl, what I told people when they asked me is, if your kid is all gung-ho and this is what they want to do and it's going to cause a big fight, let them do it. They have what to rely on. It's not considered prohibited. It's part of the game of Purim. It's mutar. No one thinks they're getting dressed up to be like a girl, even though, when my brother got dressed up, he was like 15, and he got dressed up really nicely, and he wore a very nice wig. And then it was like towards the end of Purim afternoon, we had finished the suda, everything was done. And those were the days where he took pictures with a real camera, and we went to the photography store to develop the pictures. So we waited in the car, and my father went in to give the film. We're sitting in the car, all my brothers and I, and in the car next to us is a non-Jew and his girlfriend. So my brother, who's sitting in the front seat, starts flirting with the guy in the car next to us. And we all, like, hid, so you shouldn't see we're all in costumes. And my brother's batting his eyelashes. Now he was all dressed up, you know, necklace and a nice skirt and lipstick. And the guy in the car is going head over heels over my brother. He doesn't know it's a guy. And suddenly his girlfriend notices that he's staring at this girl, and she starts beating the daylights out of him. What's wrong with you? Why are you looking at another girl? And we were rolling, like we were all like peeking out of the side. So we all suddenly revealed ourselves. And then this guy goes to his girlfriend, they're all dressed up. And then my brother like lifts his wig and sees it's a guy. And then, so he calmed down the guy and his girlfriend. So I'm saying, he really looked like a girl. I'm saying that was the one time in our family history that someone got dressed up as a girl. You see, the other guy was like really, my brother was like 14, 15 at the time. What?
Love at first sight,
right? I'm saying, but it's not the custom anymore. I'm saying today, if one out of 50 times someone got dressed up as a girl, so to say this is still our custom is just not so. I'm saying in their times, that's what he writes. Everyone did it.
Now, customs seem kind of voluntary. Does it seem that from the sources that you read, it seemed to be almost obligatory?
It wasn't obligatory, but everyone did it. It was part of the festivities.
Is it that you should do it, if there's such a custom? Like banging your feet.
Banging your feet you should do, but this... So
when is the custom kind of opt-in? Or when is it...
Well, that's a long question, which we discussed 3 weeks ago, and we can discuss it again. We discussed, you guys remember, the breakdown, three types of customs. What?
Each other website.
It's on my website already, the three types of customs. However, in a nutshell, today, what we see is the custom is, A, not everyone gets dressed up. B, we don't see adults getting dressed up. The adults that get dressed up are the exception. When I come to dance with you guys here, I get dressed up. I'm saying, but in general, it's people who are in education that get dressed up for their students. But you don't see the average adults getting dressed up. Meaning what he described here, the youngsters and the older people, who do you see? You see an older person getting dressed up. You think he's quacked, right? You don't see today that older people get dressed up. Again, people in education do. Rebbes and teachers when the students come. I'm saying, in education, people get dressed up because it's important for the students. I'm saying, I also get dressed up when I come here. And when I visit when I have people in our community whose kids are in the hospital or they're in the hospital, I get dressed up to visit them. Makes them happy. I'm saying, so then I get dressed up. But in general, you don't see adults getting dressed up. So today, I'm saying again, a guy's in Mahon Meir, it's part of the fun, get dressed up, be with the guys. But when you'll have kids, and you see all your neighbors and your whole community, the adults aren't getting dressed up, you shouldn't be the quack. I'm saying there's the idea of a custom is what Klal Yisrael does. And today...
I shouldn't stamp my feet when they read Paro's name, Jordan Parsha.
There's no such custom, no.
So even though you could think through the logic, that's not, we use the custom.
No, the custom, right. A custom is just that. What is everyone doing? The wording for a custom is, Al Titosh Torah Imecha. don't forgo the Torah that your mother taught you. Why is it called the Torah that your mother taught you? Because it's something that there's no text. We're talking about a mother who's illiterate, meaning I'm saying really, up until 150 years ago, women were illiterate. The woman who knew how to read was the exception. Meaning, realistically, that was life. I'm saying women did not know how to read. So the Torah says, hey, you better listen to that lady. Why should I listen to her? What can she show me in Torah? What does she know? Oh, she knows a lot. So you had Rashi's daughter who knew how to read and write, right? They were the ones who transcribed what he taught. You had learned people. Probably Kalba Savua's daughter knew how to read and write. She was educated. But the average woman didn't know how to read or write. I'm saying up to 150 years ago. That was the exception. So maybe some knew how to read. I don't know. They say Rabbi Kiva Eger's wife did not know how to read or write. That's what they say. That's what I heard when I was a little bit younger than I am young today. So they told me then that Rabbi Kiva Eger is big. He was the top genius of Europe. His wife did not know how. I was also told that one of the Chafetz Chaim's wives was illiterate. Maybe both. One, it wasn't considered like something was missing. Meaning,
and those Chafetz,
No. His wife passed away, and then he married again. I'm just saying, so Torati Mecha, the first interpretation is, it's what your mother teaches you. She's not pointing to any text. She's telling you this is what Jews do. So what Jews do is what she knows everyone does. The second interpretation is, Imecha, Chazal often said, is Umatcha, your nation. Look around, what's everyone doing? That's Minag. What are people doing? And if they're not doing it, then that's not the Minag. And if they are doing it, it is. So I'm saying today, there's a Minag. People get dressed up. For you guys, get dressed up. It's part of your fun on Purim. You're still students. Younger students, older students, you're students. Enjoy it. But when you get married, Bezrat Hashem, you have kids, you have grandchildren, and you see that no one around you is getting dressed up, so you could do what we do. You know, my wife gets earrings with smiley faces. Interesting earrings for Purim. So again, we're in education. I have a tie that's, Disney characters or something else that's amusing and interesting. When I used to teach, I'd wear that during Adar. So now I wear it on Purim. You know, Daffy Duck, and I don't know what else. I get these at the shekel store. Don't pay 50 shekel for them. You get them at the shekel store. Right? So say there, you get the stuff that's going to be within the range of the minhag. But if all your neighbors, adults, are not getting dressed up, so that's not the minhag anymore. I'm saying the line here is I'm doing the minhag. That's what the Rama says, Umashinaku. The custom that. Now, there are some communities where the adults get dressed up. There are still communities, I guess. If I'm not mistaken, in Chicago, there are still communities there where the adults get dressed up. And in the Lower East Side, when I was there, if I understood correctly, I never went. I was absolved. But there was the Purim party of the Lower East Side, and as far as I understood there, many of the adults got dressed up. So, okay, if there are communities, that's the custom. So be a part of it. I'm saying, but today, you go all over town. What adults do you see dressed up? I don't see adults dressed up. I'm saying not in Yerushalayim and not in, wearing a funny hat or something, fine, but not. I don't see it. So long as you're Machon Meir students, do what Machon Meir does. But when you move on and you're part of a community, so then you take the customs of the community.